Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores, the games every day.
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Pete, joined by Darius and Mike. And Lakers fell 116-99 in Game 5 in Memphis, bringing the series with the Lakers having a 3-2 lead back to Los Angeles. It was a game that in... You know, all my decades of watching, and we talked about this a little bit in the preview for the game, that was a game I would have been very surprised if the Lakers won the energy battle, and very much seemed to me a lot like the way that the Miami Heat won their Game 5. Unbelievable 8 seed winning in 5 games. I don't think that's ever happened before in a 7-game series. Those are games where when you're up 3-1, Mike, you kind of want to hang around, see if you can steal it at the end. And despite their in the first half, at the end of the first quarter, AD goes out, Lakers go down by double digits, then bring it back to 9. And at halftime, I'm feeling like, all right, it could be worse. It's 9. We're still in contact. Lakers bring it down to 1. D'Angelo Russell starts the third quarter off great. Lakers playing really well just as a team overall, made some defensive adjustments, and then bring it down to a 1-point game, then a 26-2 run spanning the end of the third and beginning of the fourth puts the game away. Lakers lose. They don't fold up shop until the very end, and I thought they got some good work done in terms of some adjustments and some things that we might see in Game 6. But you were there, Mike. Curious about your thoughts about the mood of the team. How'd it go?
Well, this is the time of the year and the time of the playoff series, really, which Game 5 and on, this is when the stars really earn their money. This is the differentiating fact, because you're not typically, at this point, you're not going to out-scheme somebody. You've already seen all of the looks. And so how do you score against a loaded defense? It's the stars. Like, which guys have the capability to still get what they need to get done no matter what the other team is doing? And that's a lot of times how these things get broken down. And Anthony Davis, as we were talking about yesterday, he had to have a really good offensive game. And he did. He had 31 on 14 of 23 from the field. Mm-hmm. I thought he could have gone to the foul line more. He was not getting the best whistle. And, you know, neither was LeBron, although...
All series,
yeah,
Mike.
And
that's all series, just so we're clear.
Yeah, yeah. And that's been part of it. So, but the real swing player in this game was LeBron. And I thought that early, like you mentioned, the energy, Pete, that was something that, no question, like Memphis was going to come out with the energy that the Lakers were just going to have to try to hang in. And they did. And they do it despite LeBron not really having great legs. But I did think that he used his legs to try and at least be more solid defensively than he was earlier in the series. Mm-hmm. But the fact that LeBron was so limited in his driving, and I think that was you know, by design. He took 9 threes and 8 shots in the paint, and some of those were in sort of like the mid paint. And I think that 2 things. One, when Darvin took AD out kind of in the middle of the Lakers run, I thought that was kind of a pivot point, and Memphis quickly responded and scored at the rim. But part of the reason is because LeBron, knowing how the whole series is going to play out, there's a part of him that just, not that he's conserving by any means, because he's always going until empty, But I just think that there's going to be something else there that he can call upon in his legs in game six that was going to be very difficult to do in game five. And the role players around LeBron and AD, that's a tough game for those kind of guys. That's just when you're not getting any physical advantage, when you're not going to get calls, when the other team is going to, you know, play with that level of desperation, they would have needed. And I thought, by the way, like, let's say AD stays in the third quarter, then maybe LeBron can summon 9 minutes, you know, to really make a good run. But ultimately, I don't think that was that even taking AD out was the difference. Like, I think that it was LeBron's legs as the second half went on, Memphis continuing to go. And it's Bane and Morant, like, both attacking with all of that fervor from the perimeter, and all of those perimeter attacks and assaults, those are hard to continue to meet. But I do think that the Lakers will respond on Friday, but let's stick on this game for now and get to what you guys saw when you were watching.
So I agree that LeBron was the pivot player. Where I disagree a little bit with what you said, Mike, was what you said at the beginning, where, like, you're not going to out-scheme the other team. I do think Memphis continues
general,
to find
in this series. Yeah. In this series, it happened a little bit with rotation and the way that they're playing second units against the same Lakers second unit that hasn't been working. So to me, that's more rotation and personnel than scheme. But yeah, go on.
The rotation stuff is definitely there from a schematic point. And Pete, before we got on, you had mentioned that you did a pretty deep dive rewatch. So I'm interested to get some of your thoughts around this, because I have not been able to rewatch the game to this point. But I think Memphis continues to tweak their screen actions and finding ways to get Bane loose. And I thought, and maybe you'll refute this a little bit, but I thought what they were also doing a little bit more of was not bringing as many screens to Ja.
Yep.
And letting Ja create in isolation more rather than bringing a second defender in to the mix that could challenge him, particularly Anthony Davis. I thought that those two things in tandem were like little adjustments that I don't want to say they caught the Lakers off guard, but the Bane stuff has been a continuous tweak and tweak and tweak over the last two or three games to sort of get him in to a rhythm. And he is squarely in a rhythm now. But the stuff with Ja, I was just like, oh man, there's no screen coming. And he's just attacking Dennis. Or there's no screen coming and he's just attacking whoever's in front of him. Like, or they were doing guard-to-guard screens and they were getting him onto D'Lo, and then they weren't bringing up another screen and he was just attacking D'Lo. And I thought these were just little things where it's just like schematically, those things were different from what they were two games ago, and they worked. They worked to great effect.
And to be fair, we were doing that too. We did some really cool high-low stuff. I loved how we got the ball to AD in this game, and the 23 shot attempts, I think, are reflective of that, right? That the way that when Vando is in the game, they use Jaren Jackson Jr. to guard, quote-unquote, Vando, but to help hard off of him. And then they're helping recover. They're one of the very best teams in the league at, like, off-ball defense, rotations, closeouts to the three-point line. That help defense aspect of the game, they're really good at that. And so the Lakers moved some action into the middle of the court and Vanderbilt was like flashing to the free throw line. And then we were getting AD as a back cutter because they're top blocking him, right? Like, this whole chess match has been happening on both ends of the floor. And even in the fourth quarter, the thing that you said about Ja and them setting fewer screens for him, we started to shadow him with, like, it would be Austin on the ball, but it'd be D'Lo basically playing in his zone behind him and or vice versa, depending on who was the on-ball player in that respect. And so I have a whole list of things that will start the second half of the pod of just like, these are just topics I'd love to hit over the next couple of days before the next pod. But to me, like, the top line item is just, you can't get your butts kicked in such a small amount of time to where you completely lose the rope, Mike. Like, we were right there. And then we looked up, we had a little watch party event for the team at a hotel bar. And we're watching, we're having a good old time, high five and Lakers down one, let's go. And I swear it was like 5 minutes later, it was like, damn, we are down 16 points right now. And so that to me, Mike, is the headline
like 20,
item.
20 to... two run or whatever it was.
I think it was 26-2 eventually. 20,
yeah. I mean, it just kept building.
It was 19-2 to close the quarter, Mike. And
exactly.
It went from a 1-point game to a 17-point game.
Well, that's what, so this is the other part that I feel like sometimes is hard to convey, because it, like, being there and being in some of these other games, and I think that this is how Memphis fans probably felt watching the various Laker complete blitzkriegs that have happened. These teams are both good enough, and they both have enough that if there's any amount of let up, even for a minute, that's the dam does break right away. It just does. And that's kind of what I meant. So there are adjustments. Like, the Lakers had a couple of their own. They adjusted the way that they were playing Bane for a little bit. And that got Memphis out of what they were doing. And then they made a counter adjustment. But ultimately, all of that stuff, which is significant, and I know we're going to get to it, but it doesn't go past that first factor, which was that LeBron did not have legs. He was 1 for 9 from three. He's 3 for his last, I think, like 26 or 7 now, and I might be forgetting the one of the late ones. It might even be up to 28. And what does that tell us? Legs. He's only driving in certain strategic spots, like at the end of game 5 when they absolutely needed it. And he was not getting elevation on those drives, which is why he had to lay the ball so high off the glass against JJJ. And he went into Tillman, and not JJJ was the second defender who came over on the overtime drive. Because if that's JJJ, that, you know, that's a little bit, well, actually Dylan Brooks was so bad in that play that it was all good, because he would have just gotten to the free throw line because Brooks let him get his shoulder around him. But like that was the one thing. And then it's just the role players on one side versus the role players on the other. And like the atmosphere that the Lakers are going to have, that is flipped now going back to game 6, just like it was in game 5. And that's, I guess that's my ultimate point out of this. Like the Lakers have put themselves in position to be able to just win one home game because they got that first one in Memphis. And then they held serve, when a lot of times it's really difficult to beat a good team 2 in a row at home. This game, like I'm curious, Pete, what some of your top line items are, but I really, going into it, I was talking to one of the coaches about 45 minutes before it started, and exactly kind of what we were discussing is what ended up happening. You know, it's like, well, let's see how LeBron's moving in the first quarter. What are those legs looking like? And how efficient is AD? The rest of the guys, like, could Austin have made a couple more of his? He was 4 for 13, right? Russell was 4 for 11. Rui, 4 for 8, but he made his first two and then struggled from that point on. Schroeder only got 2 shots up. Beasley somehow got 6 threes up. A lot of them were late in garbage time. But like, all of that stuff to me is if LeBron is at a different level physically, even by 10%, then those shots become more open that those guys have. And because he's able to force his will on the game that he just wasn't going to do in that game 5 based on a number of factors. So that's just what it felt like to oversimplify things. And now I think there are things around that, such as Anthony Davis playing 43 minutes or 44 minutes, which I pointedly asked about after the game, instead of 35, that solve a lot of those problems and the home crowd. But I know there are several other things to get to, Pete.
Well, I think that the whole like idea of LeBron in managing the totality of the series, there's a certain ebb and flow to it that it doesn't just apply to LeBron, right? Like, if the Lakers are down 3-1 right now, I bet your ass Anthony Davis playing 42, 44 minutes, right? Even a Dennis Schroeder, right? To a lesser degree, you're so dependent upon him for really great on-ball defense, D, that that is, I think, one of the factors in this series is fatigue, right? And how well the Lakers can manage that. I always think back to the Kobe dunk on Emeka Okafor in the 2012 playoffs when Lakers were down 1-0 in the series against the Hornets. Chris Paul led Hornets. CP3 was young at the time. Kobe was not. And we were down by like 8 in the second quarter, down 1-0 in the series against a team that was, you know, I think they were the 6th seed or 7th seed. And Kobe drove down the lane and dunks on Okafor, really changes the momentum of the game. And then in the aftermath, he says, I have a certain number of bullets left to fire. I cannot fire all of them the way that I did when I was younger. And that was how I looked at that game in a certain way. I would love for our team to be in a position where they can bring the heat every single night, even when up 3-1 and close it out, D. But I do think that there is they had a luxury of being able to try to win a game in a lower gear to a degree. But when you have that many guys in that type of mode, it's not going
to
happen.
Just Darius, to kick this to you, one quick way that we saw that is that Memphis did extend the minutes to the starters. So the Lakers bench had 80 minutes. The Memphis bench played 60 minutes. And that's a big difference. It just is. That's it. Because two more minutes of Anthony Davis probably is worth what? 4 points? You know, 5 points? Yeah. Like maybe more. And then two more minutes on top of that is worth how much? And just Malik Beasley playing 11 minutes and D'Lo playing 30 minutes. Okay, so that's the stuff that I think switches in game six. Memphis has to keep playing those guys that many minutes, that their starters were all like JJJ 38, Bane 43, Ja 38. So I think that's one major simple adjustment that is just simply playing your guys and especially Anthony Davis more in game six.
No, these are all excellent points, right? For me, and I think when we start to dive more into potential adjustments or what Memphis was doing and then forecasting the game six, I'm all for that discussion. I'm still on game five a little bit because the Lakers were down 1 point and there were 4 minutes left in the third quarter and they had the momentum. And I thought the decision to take out Anthony Davis was a defensible decision. I thought the decision to take out Anthony Davis and replace him with Troy Brown was not a defensible decision.
Yeah.
And I get the idea of consistency and sticking to the guys who you've played and trying to leverage the game a certain way. And it's easy to judge back in hindsight that something didn't work. And so we can then pick it apart. In the moment, though, and in game five especially, I thought going to Wenyan the way that they did in the first half and then going to Wenyan as they did in the fourth quarter, those minutes proved to be like fairly effective and way more of a like, oh, this seems reasonable. Like this group seems like a reasonable group against the group that Memphis was playing. I just thought at the portion of the game and the players that were in for Memphis, for the Lakers to downsize to the degree that they did, it created problems. So AD goes out at the 4:10 mark and he comes back 2 minutes later. But by that point, Memphis had already seized control back of the game. So it was a 1 point game. And then when AD comes back in, I think it was back up to 8 or 9 at that point. So Memphis had gone on a little mini run. Yep. And then once AD came back into the game, he came back in with D'Lo. And it just continued. Ja got downhill a little bit more. He had a really nice righty scoop finish around a contest that AD had. But the portion of the game that AD was subbed out, John Morant was still in the game. Desmond Bane was in the game. Jaren Jackson Jr. was in the game. And Luke Kennard was in the game. And that was the most spaced out group that the Grizzlies have that's their spacing group. That's the group that creates driving angles and makes it very hard to cover all of these screen actions because you're just spread way too thin, which makes rim.
And you have a ton of force on the basket with Ja and Jaren Jackson Jr. involved in that too. And it's no coincidence that they play that group against the non-AD group, right? There's multiple ways to win a game and you can blitz that group. And that's the thing, D, is that to survive the non-AD minutes, we have to play credible defense. We can't let them score nearly every single possession, which is pretty much what they do when AD comes off of the floor. And so the idea that, like, one of the things that I'm slightly concerned about for game six is we had an interesting Lonnie Walker substitution toward the end of that game. And my biggest concern is that they're going to be like, oh, like, we need to go to Lonnie instead of Malik, right? Or Lonnie instead of Troy. And it's like, no, the group is too small, like by a lot relative to the amount of force that Memphis can put on the basket.
The interesting thing about the way that this series has gone is that in games 1, 2, and 3, the Lakers basically were not surviving the non-AD minutes at all. Mm-hmm. They just weren't. There was literally one group that had a positive plus minus of all of the LeBron Rui groups without AD on the court. There was literally one group that had a positive plus minus, and they were a plus one out of all of the groups that had played. In game 4, that switched. And that group found something. There was an elixir that happened in that single game.
It's not, but that's the thing is it's not an elixir. It's very simple to me. Is they gang rebounded. If you're going to, it's that principle of if you're going to be smaller, you got to fly around, right? And this was not a fly around game, this game five right here. If you aren't going to fly around and have that sort of mentality or that juice, which is understandable for, you know, in terms of doing that every single game, every single moment, like you have to be bigger. You cannot be small and have the other team like have play with a greater degree of force.
Let me jump in on that though, because this is also once again NBA history. This is like why the rim is 10 feet tall. And in the postseason, if you don't have somebody credibly protecting the basket and clearing rebounds, but who's playing center in those groups? It's LeBron and then sometimes Rui. And I think it all goes back to that original point, LeBron's legs. LeBron didn't have the legs on his jump shot in game five, but he had 20 rebounds.
Yep.
And that was because LeBron knew that with that group, he had to be the one at that spot that was going to clear the glass. And so Memphis, all of Memphis' talking points, you know, I've been at all the Taylor Jenkins press conferences and so on. Like the glass was the number one thing that they talked about after game five, and especially with that unit. So they hit that. And that's where like LeBron was not going to have the legs for that. And the other guys are just, this is the point of why that I don't understand and haven't understood the whole series, the lineup around that. Other than to say that I think LeBron likes being at the five in those groups because he then doesn't have to switch out on the perimeter as much. And he can do some degree of quarterbacking or like kind of playing free safety or middle linebacker, whichever football terminology you want to use. And he can sort of direct and point and you go here, you switch there. I'm going to stay home here because he can conserve some legs that way. But then they're going to lose what they could get if, say, Wenyan were in instead of either Malik or Troy, which is, again, we've talked about it a million times. So I just think that they're getting in the film room, and I don't know if it's LeBron that is saying it, but hey, I get it. Like, these are the problems, but like, we'll do better on the glass with this group. Let's stay with this group. Or I don't know that, but something like that has to be happening because it's not like it isn't obvious that group is getting beaten up inside. And it's the same reason why I don't buy the Kings. We've gone over this with Sabonis at the five, even though he can rebound. It's the same reason I don't buy the Nuggets. Like, those are the starters though. But like if those teams go to their second units, and there isn't really an answer there either with those teams, you know, Alex Len for a couple minutes for the Kings, like you got to have a real credible guy at that big spot. And LeBron can be that guy in pockets of time. But guys, we talked about this last year, right? That when they were trying to go to those small groups with LeBron back there. And it's just like, with all of this stuff said, I think that in game six, Darius, not to get off of game five, but I think you will get more of that rebounding slash if they again go to that lineup, which I would hope that they would use Wenyan some if they don't. But I think that you'll get a better LeBron game from that standpoint in game six.
Let's go to break here. And when we come back on the other side, I have one more quick point to make on this, and then we'll get to Pete's list because it is extensive.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Mike, all of that is well said. From where I stand, I just thought that the group that Memphis had on the court specifically required something different. And that was the part that left me.
Agree. Yep.
I don't know. just left me wanting for different decisions, because you cannot play a no center group against a lineup that has Jackson Jr. and Ja Morant on the court at the same time. To say nothing of Bane, who was also getting downhill, and then Kennard, who is basically going to space you out and leave one less sort of help defender to lurk in.
I guess I want to hit some of the topics of, there's a storyline that plays out in the back and forth of every playoff series, especially, you know, a well-coached one. And this is, and so these are just like the little things that I see happening. Consider this as a list of topics, right? So we'll start with the good. I have different categories on this. The good is the main group was great once again. It's, I haven't looked up the numbers, but the D'Lo, Austin, Rui, LeBron, AD crew, you could throw Vando in there as well, was really, really good. And so as much as we're talking about the non-AD minutes, the groups where they had their main guys out there, and this speaks to Mike's point of like, you know, if you extend the minutes, just that simply solves a lot of stuff. Like I said earlier, I loved how we got AD the ball more with Vando out on the court.
The AD minutes, like the Lakers have been better, period. There's better.
Oh, by a lot. By
in the 80 minutes. Period. Yes. Yeah.
And then, yeah, Wenyen, I thought Wenyen defended Jaren Jackson Jr. decently well. Like, he's going to get some activity wins when he guards him. Wenyen also beats the hell out of size mismatches. He had gotten switched onto Luke Kennard, or basically Luke Kennard had the drop-down responsibility on him. He got an and one off of an action where Austin was setting a ball screen for LeBron. And then it was one more pass, and it was like up to Kennard to drop down. And Wenyen sealed Kennard beautifully. And just like, Wenyen's really good at that. If you've got a smaller guard or somebody that has to drop down on a play, he will win that battle most of the time. I love D'Lo's flurry to start the third quarter. And just, he has these little flurries that are super helpful in playoff games, just timing wise, where it was like, oh, well, we're back in the game, right? Just in a blink of an eye, in 90 seconds, and all of it's thanks to D'Lo. So now the bad. I think LeBron is searching for what he can rely on offense. I agree with the general point about the legs. I just don't think that that's the only thing going on. And you know, he's not, I don't think he's feeling particularly good about his jumper. I think he's searching for like go-to type of action. So I'm super curious about
our jumper and legs are the same thing to me.
No, 100%. What I'm saying though is like, how do I get to my shot? Like, what is my most reliable go-to this? I think we're going to get the answer to what LeBron believes is that in game six, and we'll see how it works. But the point is that I think he's been searching for it. Austin had an awful game, I thought, especially on the defensive end. And he's been struggling on defense, on not just in a legs type of sense, but he's been kind of losing his guy, having difficulty navigating more complicated screens. You brought this up a little bit earlier, D, of Ja not getting a screen. They started like driving him across the paint and elevating in a way that was like, ooh, that's a good little adjustment. Rather than attacking toward the basket, it also gives Ja the ability to, if he doesn't like what he has, he can veer off and continue the play. Whereas if you start at the top of the key and you hit the gas the way that Ja can, it's like the end of the play is going to happen. He's going to attack the basket, right? So those kind of like horizontal across the floor drives from Ja, I thought were really helpful. Troy does not want to shoot. He passed up a couple of shots, and every three that he's getting has been rough. Austin was forcing things on offense as well. Beasley and Rui were both really rough in terms of their off-ball defense. We went under on Kennard and Bane a few times where it was like, yeah. I think part of that's a legs thing too. Cause like, unlike Vogel's system, the defensive guards would always go over the top in that. In this system, the guard has kind of a choice to do that, but Kennard and Bane, you can't be going under on them. We talked about the small lineups and like LeBron in a drop. For me, it's a bigger thing of like, we don't have a too big look to go to. Like, that was nothing that was ever cultivated over the course of the season. And so I think that's going to bite us at some point, like not even having the option really, or like having built it out to any degree. Rui played 5 minutes in the first half. Now, Darvin does this thing where he'll play a guy less that he wants to close with in the first half. He does this with Austin too, where like, you look at halftime, it's like Austin played 9 minutes in the first half or 10 minutes. And then at the end of the game, he'll be like at 25, 28, because he played almost the entire second half. And so he's been doing that with Rui too, but that's just way too severe, right? The 5 minutes of that.
That was because he got three fouls in the first half. But I don't think that that's a for a sub. I don't think that's something right. you worry about as much, but that's why I pulled him out quickly.
No, that's fair. Thank you. And thank you for bringing that up. On the general topic, just we need to tread water in the non 80 minutes. We've talked about that. And then lastly, we have a lot more cards to play, right? In terms of adjustments, whether it's lineups, whether it's, you know, schemes, there's a lot of things that we can do. But the main thing to me, D, is like, should Beasley and Troy Brown Jr. be in the rotation going forward? Darvin alluded to this a little bit, right? That he may have to shorten the rotation a little bit. And those are the spots that really stand out to me, because just in a general sense, like, Troy looks scared to shoot, and Beasley makes a ton of mistakes and doesn't actually make the higher leverage shots very often. So anyway, that's my comprehensive list of topics I'd love for us to hit over the next couple of days.
Yeah. If I could just throw out a few numbers around the idea of the that core group that you discussed, Pete. Please. So the starting lineup has played 70 minutes together. They're a plus 20 in those 70 minutes. The swap out Vando for Rui. So LeBron, Rui, AD, D'Lo, and Austin. That group is a plus 24 in only 18 minutes. Mm-hmm. So that's just a massive, massive discrepancy there.
The 18 minutes is the part that it's like, actually, that's your best group. And
yes.
Yeah.
And then swap out D'Lo for Dennis and swap out Vando for Rui. So this is LeBron, AD, Dennis, Rui, and Austin. So that's probably your best defensive group overall.
Good call.
Right? Mm-hmm. That group has played 17 minutes and they're a plus six. Right. And so three of the Lakers' top 4 minutes wise lineups are all in the positive and are winning their minutes. The second most played group, though, has played 21 minutes, and that's the non-AD group of LeBron, Dennis, Beasley, Troy, and Rui. And that group is a minus 10 in 21 minutes. And that group, to me, is the one that hits multiple points within your, like, general and bad portions of, like, your things, right? And the question about Malik and Troy continuing to hold down a rotation spot, I'm of the mind that only one of them should play. I've been of that mind, and I think that one of them should be swapped out for Wenyan. I just think continuing to play small with that group is just a difficult choice.
There's also the option to just tighten your rotation to 8. You know, like, playing 10 at this point is actually fairly unusual.
This is another one of those things where there are two things about it. If you have a whole playoff series, I always get starting with 8, 9, see how a certain guy fits, like, you know, see if the shot's going, etc. But as things get tighter and as you know what the other team's going to do, inevitably you have to shorten that sum for, like, a desperation game like this is going to be right with game 6. So just to illustrate Troy Brown, for example, in March, Troy was taking 4.9 threes per game and hitting 2.1. That's 42%. In the postseason, he's getting maybe 2 shots a game, right, from 3. And then maybe, like, if he happens to – he got 3 layups in that were actually helpful in the OT win. But he's just not – so not only is he not in rhythm or even close to it, but he doesn't have the confidence to go up and drain that one shot that he might get. And so every single time he goes up for it, it's all of the pressure of all this happens. And for Beasley, he's kind of the same, except his volume is more like typically 7. And now it's 3 or 4. And he's, Pete, you've talked about this. Like, Beasley's not a knockdown shooter if he's just wide open. That he's not like Luke Kennard, where, oh, you leave him. Oh, shit.
Right.
That's a make.
Yeah.
You know, it's like he's got to get up. So where is their utility then? Essentially, it's like, can you give a little bit of versatility and size? Or can you go over and defend some guards for a little bit and just not screw things up for a while? And in a game like this, in game 6, when, again, I've already projected AD by asking AD and Darvin about it to get up to anywhere between 42 and 48 minutes, LeBron's going to be playing a ton. Austin's going to be playing a ton. D'Lo and Dennis between them. So whoever else is getting minutes, it's going to be low. They're not going to get a lot of shots. Those shots are not going to be that open, most likely. And because there aren't going to be that many shots, period. So I just think, like, this game 6, you absolutely shorten the rotation. And another reason why I'll just advocate for Wenyan, and even in a game like this, if it's for 6 minutes as opposed to 6 Troy minutes, he doesn't have to shoot like that. He just, what he can do, just give some size, go grab a couple rebounds, you know, put your arms out. That to me in a game like this is, it has more utility than a wing that isn't feeling that comfortable right now in the spacing that's not going to be there anyway. If that player is out there.
If I could talk real quick about a few of the defensive minutes from Wenyan, and we made an adjustment on Bane. There's a reason I brought him up in the last pod. I thought they really found something, and he had 21 first half points. At halftime, D, Lakers adjust and bring AD up higher to the level of the screen. We start blitzing to a certain point, right, on Bane to have him give up the ball. They counter, right? There's a cool little cat and mouse, but I thought the Lakers won that adjustment in that stretch, and that's how part of the reason why the score got back down to 1 point or the deficit, because Lakers were a lot better to start the third quarter, in part because of that on Bane. Wenyan gave up two drives to Bane on switches in the minutes that he played. However, he was pressed up too high on him. That's just a certain degree of, like, you don't have to cross, you know, be guarding Bane 30 feet away from the basket. And then after those two plays where he gave up buckets, and I think one was an and one, after those two, it wasn't as aggressive, and it was, there were good minutes defensively. And so there's just like more there, but that's one of the storylines of like Bane getting hot and then the Lakers' adjustments to it defensively. Wenyan can help you on the perimeter defensively in ways where it's like, if it's Wenyan and LeBron and Rui, that still allows LeBron to be that quarterback hanging out in the back without asking him to engage as and fly around defensively in ways that is a more difficult ask. Wenyan can guard the perimeter, and that's important.
My overall message about this series is that no one is winning this series on offense. The only time that the other team is going to win the series on offense is because one of the teams decided to play too many bad defensive players. So in game five, go look at Luke Kennard's plus minus in game five and how many minutes he played. Go look at Tyus Jones's plus minus and how many minutes he played. These guys did not play a lot of minutes, and their plus minus was terrible. One of the reasons why was because they ended up playing against that Lakers bench unit that actually did gang rebound and then played in transition and just got more early offense opportunities against defenders that aren't physically there in the way that Bane and those other guys are.
The one we won in LA, this is the one you're talking about.
Yes, yes, I'm sorry, game four. And so when the Lakers decided that, it's just like, okay, well, we're going to play lineups with Malik Beasley and Troy Brown in them. Those are, look, like, I think Troy is a fine defensive player, and I think that he's had some really good defensive moments over the course of the season, but he is not one of your best eight defensive players, or seven defensive players, I should say. So I'm advocating playing eight rotation players, and only one of them is a guy who I don't necessarily think is a top-level defender, and that's D'Angelo Russell. And so the guys I'm advocating playing are the five starters, and then I'm advocating playing Dedis, Rui, and Wenyan. And it's just like, if you're going to win this series, you're going to win it on defense, you're going to win it on the glass, and then you're going to win it in transition. And that's the path. In this series, that is the path. In other series, it may be a different path. And D'Lo may be able to get off, or Dennis may be able to get downhill, or we're going to run all these nifty pick and roll actions. And look, AD is going to kill this other defender who has no chance against him. Maybe that's how a different series goes. This series, the one I've been watching for five games, it's like, oh man, the Lakers just need one more defender on the floor instead of a small player, because they need the help on the glass and they need another body just to be a body in the paint that isn't a 6'5 guy, right? And if this sounds like a criticism that we've leveled, or that I've leveled in the past, it's because it is. It's the same criticism that I've had pretty much all season around the lineup construction, around what lineups work and what lineups don't for this specific version of the Lakers, because their guards are not these bullish, like, thick, like,
no,
I'm built like David Roddy and Desmond Bane.
It's the opposite.
It's the opposite. And so they need the front court support as much as they can get.
Exactly.
And it's Wenyan's your best option there. And if there was a player better than Wenyan, I'd be saying, like, play that dude, right? But Wenyan's the best guy, and he can actually help you on the glass, both backboards, And as just a finisher inside who can score against NBA level big men, he can score against Xavier Tillman if Tillman is offering defensive resistance against him inside. There's just a certain level of oomph Wenyen plays with, and I just want to see it, Mike, because I think that he's been fine during this series in the limited minutes that he's gotten.
Yeah. The last point I want to make, and this is partly, again, coming out of being in Memphis for a long time. I felt like a month of my life this last, a month and a week somehow. It's just, it's a really good, tough, hard team. You know, they pushed Golden State to six games last year, and they didn't have Ja for half of the series. The Warriors beat the Nuggets 4-1. They beat the Mavericks 4-1. They beat the Celtics 4-2. Same as they beat the Grizzlies. Like, they were the number two seed despite having a bunch of different injuries and stuff going on. Jackson missed the first month of the season. Ja missed his time. They lost Adams. They lost Clark. But Tillman ends up being almost a better playoff player in some ways than Adams, who I think the Lakers could have played off the floor, and another guy they could have called out and gone at. Clark, I do like as a backup big, and I think he would have hurt the Lakers' second unit. But again, to just be able to go to Tillman and count on him for 35 solid minutes defending LeBron, scoring at the rim efficiently, not doing things wrong, and he's like their eighth best player. So It's just the Lakers have done very well despite a lot of things they haven't done right to get to this point. And all they have to do is win. I'm going to say all they have to do, but they have to win one home game where they can throw everything at it. They can throw AD, who is not like AD has not looked tired to me this series when his minutes have gone up. He's like, he's fine. He's good. His wind is good. LeBron has, and we knew that going in, but it's just the opportunity. It's right there in front of him. As good as Memphis has been, the Lakers absolutely have enough to win this game, and they should expect to do so. So let's see it.
Yeah, it's something that I think the Lakers are in a good spot, right? Like, we're going to lament every little detail that we can because this is the playoffs, and I'm so grateful that we have the opportunity to agonize over a sixth game against the same team where we're in a 3-2 type of spot. This is great. I think the Lakers are in a good spot, but they have work to do because Memphis is good. This is a losable series. I said that even after game four, we go up 3-1, right? And so that is something that there's work ahead.
You got to treat six like seven.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so we will be back tomorrow to kind of continue this pod and preview tomorrow's game a little bit more. But until then, you've been listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Ainge has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front. Broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. And the Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game.
Rebound to Vlade. 3 seconds left. Van Exel the winner. It's on the way. Good.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds, Shaq with his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Ready pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Two. One.
Miss it.
Unbelievable. For the victory. It's over.
Shot clock now to five. Bryant.
Yeah.
And that was a little tough to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis, 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers! James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.